So welcome to show one of Zero to Agile, and a couple of things you'll know right off the bat is no bumper music, no fancy intro. This is my very first podcast, and this is my very first episode, so I will iterate through this and learn as I go, and get better as we go along. One of my goals for this is I run a couple Agile conferences, and I've been speaking on software improvement, whether it's, from the developer side or from the process side, for a long time. And I know just so many people who are just super smart, and I wanted to have an opportunity to just sit down and talk with them and not only learn myself, but take those messages that I got from those industry leaders that I know and share it. So for the first show, I got a little inspired by reading a blog post from a friend of mine. Joel Semenyuk wrote a blog post where he lists the top five Agile practices that you can start using immediately, regardless of your current environment. And you can read that blog post at bit.ly/top-5-agile. And that was really the impetus for this show. I wanted to get Joel and another friend of mine, Stephen Forte, who's been doing Agile for a long time, together and just find out how they started down this path of doing what now is commonly called Agile software development. So we'll get right into the interview. I met with them up in Boston, and here we go. I have two Agile thought leaders sitting with me here up in Boston, and I'd like to kind of get their background and how they got started in Agile. So I've got Stephen Forte.
Hi there.
And Joel Semenya.
Hello.
And we'll give them an opportunity to introduce themselves.
I'll go first. I'm Stephen Forte, and I am the Chief Strategy Officer of Telerik, the tools and UI vendor for the .NET and HTML5 platforms. And before I was working with Telerik, I was working at a startup based in New York City. And that was an interesting startup where we did a lot of agile work. And before that, I was a chief technology officer way back in the .com era of a startup. It wasn't a startup, but called Zagat Survey, recently acquired by Google. And that is actually where I began my journey with agile, which we'll talk about later.
And my name is Joel. I'm actually the Executive Vice President at Telerik, and I'm responsible for the Agile project management tools called TeamPulse, and I've been with Telerik now for about 18 months. And before that, I used to work for a company called, actually I co-founded a company called ImagineIt. And while I was at ImagineIt, I worked for about 10 years as an Agile coach. Some of those years, we didn't call it an Agile coach, we called it a SEPI coach, Software Engineering Process Improvement coach, and worked as a trainer, as an educator, as a speaker during all that time, working with customers all around the world.
Thanks for coming on the show. Appreciate you guys taking the time to share some of your thoughts, and kind of wanted to reflect on how you guys got to where you are in Agile. You guys are both, well-known thought leaders in the Agile community, and you had to start somewhere. So if we wouldn't mind talking a little bit about that, that'd be great.
Sure. My journey with Agile was way before it was called Agile. It actually started about 1995, 96. I was working as a chief architect for a large investment company up in Canada. And we were rolling out the first ever global mobile workforce. About 10,000 mobile workers, and we were rewriting parts of Windows 95 to try to make it a bit more secure. I'll leave it at that. We had a really big team, a huge team. We had Oracle in there, Microsoft. We had a whole bunch of consulting companies. And what we were finding was that things were not breaking down because of technology. We never had, our teams never had technology problems. We had team problems. We have people problems. Everything was hard because of people. And we realized that there were certain things that worked really well for us. And during that time, I started to kind of make a list of things that really worked well. And I was an architect there for a number of years. And I started, you know, thinking about we needed more feedback mechanisms in our processes. We needed better ways of compiling our solution and understanding where it breaks sooner than later. We wanted to have very structured meetings and face-to-face communication and limit the use of email and documentation for communication and collaboration. So I started making lists, and I was a master of lists at that time.
Still are.
I still am. Master of something, at least.
Have to be master of something.
And we found that as we followed these practices, we were just better. And soon thereafter, I started a small a company at the time. It grew quite large over the years, but my focus was on a practice that I called SEPI, Software Engineering Process Improvement. And this was still early in the VB days, and part of my practice was helping organizations adopt Visual Basic in the enterprise. So looking at how to write bigger applications, massive applications using VB 6 at the time, good times. And the second half of that was to take the list that I've been compiling and try to put it into practices. Soon thereafter, this thing called XP came out, and it was all the rave. And I remember looking at it and going, I do these things. That list matches my list, right?
And you should have written a book.
I should have written a book about it.
Should have signed something
called Joel's List, and it would have been. I should have signed a manifesto or something like that. And it really excited me because in Winnipeg there wasn't a lot of software engineering thought leadership, and at the time I wasn't doing a lot of traveling and I didn't have the exposure. And I thought, here I am being all unique and figuring out the methods of the world where, other people were in fact struggling with the same thing. So it really opened up my eyes, and I was like, wow, there's a lot out there. So XP was definitely one of the first.
What year was this?
Jeez, I don't know. It was
late 90s,
97.
So after Kent Beck's book.
Yeah.
Right.
And then it just kind of skyrocketed from there. Did we call it agile? Was it the same drum that we're beating today? No, we just thought it was really healthy practices that all of us would jump onto. And so I started getting into feature-driven development, Scrum. If it had any association with the list that I had maintained, I was jumping right into it. In fact, for many, many years, I did a lot of work with feature-driven development and teaching people about, how to think about requirements, how to think about structuring their teams, how to manage their work, how to manage teams. And the time that I really fell into becoming, I won't call myself a thought leader, but presenting about Agile I was presenting at TechEd. I don't know how many years ago this was. It was 7 or 8 years ago.
And TechEd is one of the big Microsoft conferences.
Microsoft TechEd. I think it was in Orlando. And my first session ever was a session on why teams fail. And it wasn't about, how to be successful. And I thought, well, no one's going to come to my session. This is a technology conference. This is all about, at the time, ASP and all the new .NET stuff and everybody's all. I had 1,000 people in my audience my first time session. I was like, wow, I must have hit a chord here because my experience taught me that it wasn't technology. Technology came and went. We all learned it. We forgot about it. We learned something new. And projects didn't succeed or fail because of technology. Well, we've seen some projects fail because of technology. Don't get me wrong. If the team didn't work, the project would never work, no matter what your skill set was and the technology that you used. And so I really kind of focused on that, based on some of the principles in PeopleWare, from DeMarco, a great book that is still relevant today that talks about the way people work and how to get way more out of your teams by the environment that they work in, the attitudes that everybody has. And
pretty much any book by Tom DeMarco.
Yeah, Tom DeMarco's star.
Agile practitioner should read.
Yeah. As time went on, I was involved with many, many projects and would always bring forward these practices into those projects. And the ones that weren't so successful, we didn't have the same success rate in adopting those practices for the organizational reasons or whatever. It was definitely through experience and learning and that common mindset that really kind of got me into the world of Agile. And we're seeing that continually shift even nowadays, which is just fantastic. The community is very, very vibrant.
So, Joel, I just want to ask you a question. You mentioned that the thing you noticed the most were people problems.
Yeah.
And is that really talking about the development team, or even bigger than that? You know, the problems with, you know, between the development team and maybe their chemistry, but also talking about, you know, the testers and the project managers and the customer and things like that.
It was many, many layers. One of the first things that shocked me was that how little the customer was involved, that we put these proxies in front of them and that we pretended to understand them. And then we pretend to write these big documents.
Look for excuses not to talk
to
them.
And create nice, pretty UML documents to take what the customers were giving us and turn them into something scientific so we can build. Turns out we always got it wrong, tremendously wrong. And we ignored the customer's voice. We didn't involve them enough. And we found that when the customer had their voice continually, we understood better. We understood more. We were able to blend that information. The other thing that I found was that many of the older organizations, especially those that misinterpreted the unified process or the rational unified process, because at its heart, it had some agile properties. It was very iterative. Its primary goal was to catch waste earlier than later. Just implementation went off the scale.
Implementation was wrong.
Yeah. So we tend to see lots of silos between people. So we had, in one project, we had our users would talk to our business analysts who would produce these nice, pretty documents. And the business analysts were not structured very much, so they would produce stuff that would be consumed by what they called the systems analyst, who would produce it all in UML and use cases. And they would give that documentation over to the designers, who would design the application around that, who would then pass it over to the developers, who would pick up the phone and call the customer, what do you want? I don't understand 700 pages of documents per screen.
Well, not only that, but it's like the telephone game, right? You line up a whole bunch of people and you say one thing into somebody's ear and have them whisper it all down the line. That's and exactly what comes it. Out the other end is not anything like what the input was.
That's exactly right. I mean, there's a lot of interesting statistics that demonstrate how much information you lose in different mediums. You know, when you write it down in an email, you're losing a lot of implicit information. And so I came up with the term high bandwidth. You know, we want high bandwidth communication. You know, talking to people with a tin can and a string does not lead to good communication. You know, if someone was texting you the requirements of your next project, that, you know, you would think of that unacceptable. But even forms of email and very, very detailed communication actually erode good communication on a team. Good understanding, at least, right? Yeah, I actually worked with a company, I won't name names, that built the same product three times.
My name names.
Because they're still around.
You just nod.
No. And they built the same product three times and got it wrong three times. And they did not include customers in a lot of what they're doing. And they spent millions and millions of dollars and ended up writing a system wrong three times.
Is that a company called Microsoft?
No.
Well, thanks, Stroll.
Well, one thing I learned while getting ready to do this podcast was it takes a lot of moving parts to put a podcast together. It's not just record a file and throw it out there. So I've got to thank our sponsor, Team Pulse, from Telerik. While on the topic of getting started with Agile, did you know that Telerik's Agile project management solution, Team Pulse, features a unique analytical tool called the Best Practices Analyzer? This will help you and your team easily and painlessly adopt Agile principles while working on software projects. The Best Practices Analyzer is especially useful for not-so-mature teams because it helps them stay aligned and on track throughout the whole process, but also helps mature teams discover things they might have missed in the process. So please go ahead, check it out, support our sponsor at www.telerik.com/adopt-agile. That's www.telerik.com/adopt-agile. And without our sponsors, I would not be able to do this podcast. So please give them a visit. Thank you. Now back to the interview.
Steve?
Well, I got into Agile. Let me take a step back. I got into Agile about 12 years ago. And I have been a practitioner of all three of the majors. So I have been a practitioner for a long time of XP. I've been a practitioner for a very long time of Scrum. And I've been a practitioner for a fairly long time of Kanban.
So XP being extreme programming.
Yeah, which is really the first major brand of Agile to emerge. And all three of them, I came about by complete accident. And I won't really go into all three because there are time limits to this podcast. So I'll actually just talk about my introduction to Agile in the first place. So in the mid-90s, I was really good at Waterfall, like really good at Waterfall. I had zero failed projects under my belt. And we were doing some extremely high-end work. We built websites for very, very large properties, including things like the SuperBowl.com and things like that, and all with Waterfall. Now, of course, we modified Waterfall and we're very flexible. And I then, in summer of or early 2000, I took over to be the CTO of Zagat Survey. This was right in the height of the dot-com bubble. And we delivered just fine on Waterfall, believe it or not. And one of our board members gave me Kent Beck's book. And I pretty much read it, and I won't say I dismissed it, but I was like, well, this is cool. Maybe we can take pieces of it or something. And then I quickly kind of forgot about it. Like, I just let it on the wayside. So as I said, I got into Agile by accident. I can trace it back to the summer of the year 2000, laying on my back in pain on the battlefield of paintball. And I was running, playing paintball, and practically broke my ankle where I could not walk. And long story short is when I got back to the office, I had to go talk to the marketing people all the time to the point where it hurt me because I refused to use crutches, right? So I actually used a baseball bat as a cane. It's another weird story, but we won't go into that. And because of that, I had to use a backpack and walk all the way to the other side of the office to sit and talk to the marketing folks because we're really relaunching. You know, back then your website was huge, right? This is the beginning of the dot-com era. So then I eventually just actually started sitting right next to the marketing person. And long story short from there is the developers would come over and ask me questions. And they would say things like, oh, we can't do this. And I've trained them pretty well where they would not come to me with a problem, but then they would come to me with the alternative saying, okay, we can't do this, so here are the three options. And I would choose for them option A. The marketing person sitting next to me would overhear me and say, whoa, wait a minute, option C is 10 times better. And it took about two or three times for this to happen that I realized we were in compliance with the most major principle of XP, which is co-located, right? Co-located teams. And I stupidly, when my foot healed, went back to my office, but eventually then went back with the marketing people. And from that point on, it reinvigorated my interest in XP, and we started then moving into the iterations. We started, you know, and then all of a sudden I realized I wasn't using Waterfall anymore. And then we didn't really go with the pair programming, but XP focuses a lot on engineering. And I used to call myself the CEO, not for chief executive officer, but the chief enforcement officer. I would have to make sure people checked in code. Stuff we take for granted today because we have tooling. But back then, 12 years ago, we did not have the tooling. Make sure they had code comments, make sure we did code review and all the code looked the same. And as I said, I was the chief enforcement officer. And I would publicly chastise developers who violated the principles. And we were religious adherers of Steve McConnell's Code Complete. We even hired him to come in and talk to the team. And talking with McConnell, I forget the guy behind it, but the spiral method, which is the grandfather of Scrum. And we started using all the engineering practices of XP as well. And as I said, it all became by accident because I injured my ankle and I couldn't walk and I had to go sit with the marketing team. And we found it pretty interesting by changing from Waterfall to the process with a rudimentary version of XP, we realized our ThoroughPIP was just so much better. And the customer, which is an internal customer, not the customers of Zagat.com, but the marketing team that was responsible for the website, noticed this humongous difference in what we built and the collaboration. It was no more finger pointing, right? Because a lot of times it was like, release the website, oh, move this over 6 pixels. Seriously, like that, you know. And now we were doing things, I called it small iterative chunks. Don't ask me why I threw the word chunks in there, but we sold that kind of to the CEO and we never looked back. And then we started implementing more and more. And eventually by the time I left Zagat in 2002 and started another business, we were doing pretty much, 90% of what XP prescribes, and we left Waterfall way behind and kind of forgot about it. So I went from being a Waterfall, someone who was very comfortable with Waterfall and delivered very well with Waterfall. And the reason behind it is, what's interesting is Waterfall was built around, like, when you're building the space shuttle. Like, you use Waterfall to build big systems that cost a lot of money and have a lot of risk. in the internet era, which we're still in, or I guess we've moved into like the device plus cloud era, but more or less we're still in that same...
Three screens in the cloud.
Well, let's not go down that road. But yes, three screens in a cloud. I never understood what that third screen was, but that's a different story. Is it my watch? That said, is in this era, if we're rebuilding, if we're building Amazon.com, you know, you can iterate, and you're not going to go out of business if you screw up one or two of the things. But or you're not going to lose a tremendous amount of money. But, you know, machines like space shuttles blow up if you screw things up, right? So I understand the need for waterfall, and I didn't realize it at the time, but I was working at a company where agile made more sense, where waterfall was overkill. Because I was really good at waterfall, I made it work and I started adapting it for our needs at Zagat. But then pretty quickly, XP kind of fell in our lap and we took it from there. So I fell into Scrum and Kanban similar ways by accident, more because of how the business, they were both at my startup, and they both kind of came to play to solve a need that we had with the team. So it was, I think Joel said it in the very beginning, you know, it all comes down to people. And so I was trying to do XP things. They were remote teams and, you know, things like the daily scrum and the retrospective. All that made sense. And that's how we kind of got, you know, I evolved. I moved from XP to Scrum. We also had things like, well, we didn't have TFS at the time, but we had the technology that I wasn't the CEO or the chief enforcement officer anymore, especially since I was working with contractors where they're very diligent about that. If you tell them you're not going to pay them, right, if they're not going to check in code into a source repository and format code in a certain way. So I didn't really have to have as much of a problem with enforcement. And I actually think that, you know, XP really focused a lot on the engineering and solved a lot of those initial engineering problems. Once we solved those problems, Scrum became very popular. And Scrum, in my opinion, solves the communication problem. Scrum is very prescriptive on communication. And now, once we solve that kind of communication problem, we still have a delivery problem or a managing the flow of inventory problem. And I think that's where we might start looking at things like Kanban. So that's kind of my introduction to Agile. Completely by accident, getting shot with paintball.
Yeah, if you were a better shot, you wouldn't have...
I was a good shot. If I would have been a little more coordinated and not fell over a log, the world might have been different. I might still be doing waterfall.
Well, and what strikes me about both your stories is you guys started doing what is now popular called Agile long before Agile was, you know, before the manifesto was written,
before it was mainstream. Coming,
you know, but I don't know if it's mainstream yet. It's certainly getting there. So, you know, it's great that you guys were able to find your own way out of the dark tunnel, right? Where now there's plenty of lights dangling for people. So along those lines, just in closing, what would you recommend for people that want to get started down this road of Agile?
Oh, this is the exact, if anyone's even seen me speak before, they know exactly what I'm going to say. Joel's rolling his eyes because we've spoken on Agile a million times. Go to the agilemanifesto.org and read the Agile Manifesto. There's two pages. It's two web pages. So you can read it in 10 minutes, right? And there's the four principles and then all the values, the 10 values on the next page. And that is enough to get you started, because whatever you do, whether you follow strictly Scrum or XP or Kanban, or whether you roll up your own process, you're going to have to adhere to the values, because the Agile Manifesto is a set of values, not rules. And I believe that if you look at those values and believe and buy into those values, you're going to have no problem getting started. But everyone has to buy into those values, from the CEO down to the janitor staff.
So to me, the values are the how. I always like to go back to the why. So why do these values make sense to you? You might look at them and go, oh yeah, they make sense, but really, what is it trying to solve? And one book that I think discusses the why those values work is PeopleWare. It talks about why...
Which was written way before Agile was ever coined as a term.
So it talks about people's behaviors and how they work and how we understand each other and how we work with one another. And that helps drive the values that came in and were written down in the Agile Manifesto. So go back to the why. Understand that software development is not a technical problem, it's a human one. And once we understand the human characteristics that make that tough, which are really covered very nicely in PeopleWare, the values that we see and the practices that we see in Agile make perfect sense. They're like, oh yeah, that solves that problem. So that would be my additional recommendation on top of Steve's, is to go and read PeopleWare.
It's a fun
short read, excellently written, and really talks about the why. And then the how is purely connected after that.
Great. Well, gentlemen, I really appreciate your time helping me kick off this podcast. And I'm sure a lot of people are going to find themselves needing to start that journey. And I think those tips are great.
Hopefully they won't be on their back on a paintball field. Hopefully they'll get into Agile in a much more constructive way than I did.
Or at least less painful.
Right? Less painful way.
So, well, thank you very much for your time. And love to have you guys come back on the show sometime.
Anytime.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you want to reach out and have any comments, concerns, or suggestions for future episodes, you can either go to our homepage, www.telerik.com/zerotoagile, or email us at zerotoagile@telerik.com. Thanks for listening.